All right, cool. Good afternoon, everybody. The Appropriations Committee will come to order. Adrian, would you please call the roll?
Chair Trumbull.
Here.
Vice Chair McClure. Vice Chair McClure.
He's going to be late.
Okay. Rep. Alexander. Avila.
Here.
Burton.
Here.
Bush.
Here.
Diamond. Drake. Ranking Member DuBose, excused. Duran.
Here.
Fine.
Here.
Geller, excused.
Not me.
Grawl.
Here.
Grant.
Here.
Ingolia.
Here.
Jenny.
Here.
Latvala.
Here.
Leek.
Here.
Masulo.
Here.
Umfroy. Perez.
Here.
Plankin.
Here.
Placentia, excused. Renner.
Here.
Roth.
Here.
Stevenson.
Here.
Tomko.
Here.
Willite.
Here.
Williams, excused. Williamson.
Here.
Very good. With the quorum being present, welcome everybody to the Appropriations Committee. Members, today we're going to hear a presentation on debt, bonding, reserves, and other factors influencing bond rating. Our presenter today is Mr. Ben Watkins from the Division of Bond Finance. Mr. Watkins, thank you for being with us today, and you are recognized at your convenience, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm here today, been asked to come visit with you all about revenues, shortfalls, reserves, structural budget balance, where recurring revenues equals recurring expenditures, and credit ratings. If I may, Mr. Chairman, proceed. So in thinking about this in terms of providing you all information that'll put you in a position to make informed decisions, I thought the best thing to do was have a look at historically where we've been to provide some perspective on general revenue collections, the economy, and the fiscal and budgetary impact of COVID. And potentially measures around that. The only other comparable event or period for comparison purposes, at least that I've experienced during my tenure, is the financial crisis and the Great Recession. So this provides some perspective around the fiscal impact on the state. And as you can see, the impact from the Great Recession was both longer over a three-year period and steeper than the revenue decline that we've experienced in the COVID crisis. So fiscal year 21-22, that's the only one not shown on the chart, or 22-23, we have an increase in revenue. So you can see the drop occurring from $33.4 million in 2019 to approximately $2 billion less, $31.4 million in the fiscal year just concluded, 6/30/20. And then a resumption of the expected revenue growth for both the 22 and 23 fiscal years. So just to walk you through what has transpired and how we have how we think about that and how we look at that, we go back to January of 2020. So it's a year ago from the starting point with the revenue estimates that were used in January of 2020 to for the legislature to build the budget for the current fiscal year that we're in. And you can see for the blue chart is first blue bar on the left, we experienced a revenue decline in last fiscal year, really all concentrated in the last quarter of the fiscal year because we were running ahead of estimates through March when the response to COVID occurred. And we ended the fiscal year net down about $1.9 billion for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2020. And then we roll forward And we see that the August estimates, which were new revenue estimates, taking into account circumstances around the economic and financial impact of COVID, the revenue estimating conference took $3.4 billion out of the current year revenue estimates to address those circumstances. Then we roll forward to December. We had been experiencing monthly revenues in excess of the August estimates, October, November, and in December, the Revenue Estimating Conference met again and revised revenue estimates upward by $1.5 billion, which leaves you with a net change for the current year revenue estimates of $1.9 billion, let's just call it $2 billion, or about 5.6% of current revenues. So what does that mean? So not as bad as initially thought, thanks in part to the measures taking, allowing people to get back to work, but doing so safely, mitigated the otherwise more severe economic and financial consequences. The state of Florida has taken a little bit different approach than other states, but net-net, we're talking about a $2 billion revenue shortfall in the current fiscal year. So then we roll forward and we look at reserves. And this represents unspent general revenues plus the budget stabilization fund. So that's the traditional measure that the rating agencies look at in terms of evaluating a jurisdiction's financial flexibility. And so you can see reserves reserves were basically used to cover the revenue shortfall for fiscal year ending June 30 of 20. So remember, it was $1.9 to $2 billion in revenue shortfalls for last fiscal year. Well, this shows that unspent general revenues were used to cover the shortfall for the last fiscal year. So what we see is that reserves have been reduced by about half in covering the revenue shortfall. And note the percentages, and we'll talk about that a little later in the presentation, about what percentage of should reserves be of your general revenues as a general matter to provide sufficient financial flexibility to deal with inevitable economic cycles. So again, now we compare revenue shortfalls from the financial crisis and Great Recession to those experienced under the COVID crisis so far. And so what we've done is simply quantify the drops that you saw on the first chart, the bar chart, where it dropped off in the Great Recession and how it's dropped off in COVID, and simply quantified those. So the aggregate revenue declines over the three-year period during the financial crisis, $6.1 billion in total. And we look at, compare that to the COVID-19 revenue losses. And so we experienced $1.9 billion in actual for fiscal year ended June 30, 2020. And our projected revenue declines on a looking forward basis, our best estimate now, are $2 billion for the current fiscal year and $1.4 billion for the 22-23 fiscal year. So we add them up, and we're looking at $5.3 billion aggregate revenue shortfall relative to the COVID-19 crisis. The other thing to think about is federal stimulus. And what amount of money, what kind of help did we get from the feds during the Great Recession? And what are we looking at currently with respect to assistance from the federal government? And you can see the aggregate federal funding through various programs under what's referred to as ARRA, or the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, aggregated $4.5 billion. And under the CARES Act, the state share of CRF monies, they're called, coronavirus relief funds, directly to the state, received last fiscal year is $4.6 billion. And that, importantly, that excludes both money sent directly to local governments, so those cities and counties whose population were greater than 500,000 received relief monies under the CARES Act directly from the U.S. Treasury. The state also received $1.3 billion in unallocated monies for local governments within the state, and that money has been distributed to the local governments. So the $4.6 billion does not include the $1.3 billion that we received and distributed to local governments that did not get an allocation directly from the U.S. Treasury. It also does not include monies from the Fed for health care and higher education, which have also been significant under the CARES Act. So you can say, I'm going to call it roughly equivalent, the money we've gotten to date versus the aggregate of the monies we got during the Great Recession to deal with the budgetary shortfalls during the Great Recession. So resolving budget shortfall, the pleasure that you all get to have is what strategies do we deploy, what tools are available to balance the budget. So your choices as policymakers in formulating the state's budget fall into three buckets. One are budget reductions. Second is temporary use of reserves. And third are revenue enhancements. So, and it's usually a combination of these three strategies that's utilized in order to keep the state's budget in balance when we're experiencing revenue declines. And over-reliance on, you always hear the recurring, non-recurring debate, right, in formulating the budget. An over-reliance on non-recurring solutions is generally a credit negative. That is one of the many factors that factors into the state's credit rating. So maintaining structural budget balance is also an important element of the scorecard that the rating agencies use. And in this case, it's relevant to the financial management score. So then I thought it would be helpful to have a look and go back to the Great Recession and see how the legislature addressed the budget challenges that occurred in that time to see if it provides any insight or provide you all with context around addressing this. So number one, I would say, is a third line down. It's budget reductions. So you can see it started out at $1.5 billion and then tapered $1.2 billion and then tapered down to $231 million and $841 million over that period of time. So we were heavy in relying on budget cuts at the outset. And then in fiscal year 2009, you see the trust fund sweeps and the use of the budget stabilization fund. Along with ARRA monies as a combination of those. And then in fiscal 2010, more ARRA monies and revenue increases. You know, got to the point where we couldn't fix it with cuts and other funding, and actual revenue enhancements were enacted, and then fiscal 2011. So you can see it's just intended to be to show you that it was a combination of strategies at different points in time during the Great Recession in order to balance. So here is a picture of our general fund reserves. The blue bar is the budget stabilization fund. The green bar is unspent general revenue perspective. So I put this slide in to show the change in our financial position that has been caused by dealing with the revenue shortfall of COVID-19. So you see the green bar, it's obvious what happened in 2020, and this is simply an illustration of what I was referring to before, is we used reserves to cover the revenue shortfall in fiscal 2020, last fiscal year. Importantly, you'll see the blue bar in response to the spending of or the utilization of the BSF to fund expenditures during the Great Recession. Notice how that budget stabilization fund was rebuilt over a five-year period, which is a very important element from a credit ratings perspective, is the expectation that reserves can be utilized during periods of fiscal stress, but need to be rebuilt, replenished, in order to put ourselves in a position to deal with future financial contingencies. So, credit ratings. I wanted to share with you now the rating agency's perspective on the state's credit. So you can see we're AAA rated by all three rating agencies. It's both a blessing and a curse, a blessing in the sense that it's the highest possible rating you can get, a curse because there's only one way to go, and that's down. So, we're completed with the we do a deep dive with the rating agency. So we get the governor's budget director, we get the economist from EDR, and we sit down and we go through a long presentation about where we are, what we're looking at, strategies being deployed, and how we're positioning ourselves going forward. So we've had an opportunity to do that this year. We did it in September, and all of our ratings have been affirmed by the rating agencies, notwithstanding the revenue shortfalls that were related to COVID-19. Importantly, there's no one single measure that defines or dictates a rating. It's a combination of things. It's a combination of the state's economy, a combination of our financial management, of our debt position, of our budgetary performance. All of those things are factored in arriving at a conclusion relative to credit ratings. So it's not just one specific thing, but rather all of these factors measured together that define what our rating is. So on this slide, I've simply highlighted from the rating agency reports strengths and challenges, and highlighting those things that are particularly relevant to the current set of circumstances related to COVID-19. So what we see is under strengths, strong or good general fund reserves and a willingness to make adjustments to balance the budget. Under the challenges section, returning to structural balance and maintaining adequate reserves. So those are the things that the rating agencies themselves have pointed out that are particularly applicable to today. The rating agencies, the takeaway from this slide, from my perspective, first, rating agency models indicate that Florida is more susceptible to revenue declines in recession scenarios, and we've seen that with the leisure and hospitality industries in particular being hard hit, and the conventional wisdom is that those segments of our economy are going to take longer to recover than some of the other elements of our economy. But the real takeaway is that the rating agencies will continue to evaluate the state's ability to meet revenue projections and maintain reserves and structural budget balance. Okay, so lastly, specific rating agency feedback post deep dive with the rating agencies, where we've presented to them the game plan for the current and next fiscal year. In normal sets of circumstances, it's not necessarily entirely clear what their expectations are. It takes reading credit reports over and over again and looking for subtle changes in language or suggestions about what their current thinking is. This time it was very different in that they've been crystal clear on their expectations relative to managing through the COVID crisis. And so factors that could lead to a negative rating action. States historically, a deviation from the state's historically conservative fiscal management practices, which have centered on recurring budgetary action and maintenance reserves. That's from Fitch. From Moody's Investor Service, expectation that sound fiscal management practices will continue, continued willingness to raise revenues and cut spending to address revenue declines, along with maintenance of strong reserve levels. And lastly, from S&P, if Florida fails to make timely adjustments with an emphasis towards structural balance in fiscal 21, it may weaken our view of the state's budget management. And lastly, they expect the legislature will enact further structural measures in fiscal 21. So the rating agencies have clearly articulated their expectations for the state, which again is much more than the normal vague references and subtle language changes we see in credit reports. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I am concluded with the torture on credit ratings and budget shortfalls, and be happy to entertain any questions at your pleasure.
Thank you very much. Members, are any questions? Representative Avila? Sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Watkins, for that very detailed presentation. You know, my question probably stems more from kind of a comparison piece, right? So, you know, several states went through multiple lockdowns. Some states are still in lockdowns. You know, obviously, the state of Florida took a different approach, right? Is there anything in terms of a comparison of, you know, states that basically took those measures in comparison to the approach that that the state of Florida took?
You know, I don't have that information at hand today. I'm happy to look into that. I can refer to it as a general matter. What I would say is it's very spotty in terms of what jurisdictions, what they've encountered, and largely dependent on what their economy is and what it's based on, but also coupled with the measures taken to fight COVID. And but say, so New York would be a prime example of a severe lockdown, and they've been impacted as bad or as severely as anyone. California, on the other hand, has personal income tax and capital gains taxes, and so you have the whole tech sector and the stock market going up. So they've gotten tremendous monies in from their state personal income tax that you may not have expected during an economic downturn. So there are a lot of cross currents embedded in that, but I can say generally that I'm very, my own personal point of view is that we've got a good story to tell in Florida in mitigating the otherwise more significant economic and financial impact that would have occurred with the more extreme measures on lockdown.
President Wilhite.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Watkins, for your presentation. You know, I have a pretty good rating over here, sir. There you go.
Thank you, sir. These mask things, I'm confused.
No, it's okay. Sorry. I have a pretty good credit rating myself, but once in a while, you have to buy a car or you want to buy something, right? So we like to keep our reserves at a number. What is a number that the state historically has, the legislature has kept their reserves at, that we could, if we had to use some of our reserves, which are rainy day funds, which we're in with the worldwide pandemic, what's the number we could bring our reserves down to utilize a little bit, but to still keep that AAA bond rating? I know in a city I represented, you know, ours were historically 40-50% reserves, but we could bring them down to 29% and still keep that rating. So what's, do you have any kind of number we could utilize to keep that rating and offset some of our loss in revenues?
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So I think about it a little differently, and that is not where can we go and not trip the wire, but more what kind of is a longer-term plan, and do we have a longer-term plan to transition from a structural imbalance and using non-recurring revenues, which the reserves fall in that bucket, obviously, to get to structural balance, because there's the rating agencies do expect that reserves are used to cover revenue shortfalls. But on the flip side of that, what they want to see is an eye towards structural balance over some limited period of time, and then a rebuilding of reserves when economic times are better. So I don't think there's any minimum number. I think from my perspective, the better way to think about it is how are we positioning ourselves to deal with the prospective economic uncertainty, both from catastrophic events or economic events or pandemic events, so that we're positioned well enough to have the financial flexibility not to have to come in mid-year and immediately cut revenues. So I think about it a little bit differently, and I don't think it's a single factor that they'll ding you on, that there's a bright line test. If you go below this, you're going down. But rather the considering a number of things in concert with each other about, is it a responsible and prudent plan that the state is articulating in terms of addressing revenue shortfalls?
Follow up? Are you good? Chair Fine?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have three short questions, if I may. And actually, the first one builds on what Representative Wilhite just asked. He said, how much could we dip into reserves before we had an issue? There's a presumption there that we haven't done so. So if we could go back to slide three, just for everyone's benefit, my question to you is, have we not already done exactly what he was asking about? Didn't we dip into reserves to the tune of $2 billion and cut our reserves in half already?
We have indeed, and this shows it as well. So fiscal 19, $2.5 billion in the green bar is now $286 million.
Okay.
So that's the $2 billion that you're referring to that we have already spent down in unspent general revenues. We have not invaded the Budget Stabilization Fund, which is our structural reserve of constitutionally required 5% of general revenues. If you use it, you have to pay it back within 5 years. So to your point, Representative Fine, we have used reserves to cover the shortfalls for the fiscal year ending, last fiscal year ending, in order not to have to come and cut when the economy was in free fall.
Follow up? Okay. Thank you. So to be fair, so we have already cut 50% of, because the rating agencies, they don't really care whether it's the Budget Stabilization Fund or unspent GR. The rating agencies, it's all green, and so they're focused on how much cash do you have for a rainy day. We've spent already half of what we had.
Half of the unspent GR. Okay. Yes, sir. Okay.
Last question. In your opinion, and again, this is something that's hard to say, knowing that our reserves are at 50% of the level they were just a year ago, and frankly, 50% of what they've generally been, if you look back over time in terms of a percentage basis, how much additional debt do you think the state could take on before we put that credit rating at risk? Is it $100 million? Is it $1 billion? Is it $10 billion? Just sort of, you're not the one who does the ratings, and there's three different groups who do it, but how much debt capacity do you think that we have, particularly at these distressed levels of reserves, to take on debt capacity right now?
Right. So to correct something I said before, you're right, it is 50% of reserves have been used. The rating agencies look at the Budget Stabilization Fund and unspent GR together. We've spent a vast majority of unspent GR, but if you look at it on a combined basis, we're down 50% from where we were at the end of 19. And to go to your question about debt, So I really think of reserves as more of a budgetary issue, a financial flexibility issue, and one of the factors talked about in the credit rating analysis is your debt or your liability profile. So we're talking about hard debt that's outstanding plus our pension liability. And our measure with respect to that is very low relative to other states. And from a financial management perspective, what we've got in place, what this legislature has put in place as a policy matter, is a target of 6% and a cap of 7% of revenues available to pay debt service. So think about it as your monthly, your annual income, and how much of that am I spending on recurring expenditures to pay for debt that I've already incurred and is on my balance sheet. And so that number is 6% is a target, 7% is a cap. We're at about 5 point, and we use that to measure debt capacity to get to the answer to your question. So they're related, but not exactly related in the same way as I think about reserves are more important in terms of providing financial flexibility to deal with contingencies, and also the dealing with the structural budget balance. Because it's more of an annual, it's a more of a short-term thing, whereas the amount of debt that we have outstanding is a very long-term thing, more like 20 to 30 years, because it's just a little piece that we're paying back. So if I do that measure, if I use that metric to give you an estimate of debt capacity that's available within our target, it's about $6 billion. A technical term, it's a boatload of dough.
One last follow-up?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. That's within the 6 to 7% range.
That's in the, to the 6%
correct.
Range, yes, sir.
But the fact that the legislature has set that 6 to 7% range, that doesn't mean if we, my question was, how much more debt could we take on before our credit ratings might slip? We don't know that if we took on that $6 billion of incremental debt, even though that's within the budgetary parameters that we've set, that credit agencies might go, okay, that's a lot. We're going to knock it down just a teeny bit because we're, as you pointed right. out, as good as it gets. Is that fair?
So I would say that it's really not the amount. There's so much headroom on the amount of debt we can incur before that before it would get their attention that that becomes not a limiting factor.
Okay.
In my judgment, the limiting factor is dealing with the level of reserves and structural budget balance. That's what's front and center on the table today under these circumstances, I would say.
Representative Masuula.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, sir, for your presentation. I want to get back a little bit to Representative Avila's comments about comparing us with other states. When we look at the ratings from Fitch, Moody's, and S&P, they are somewhat of a benchmark, per se. That benchmark is based on somewhat of a comparison, both in the way we manage our finances in comparison with how others manage theirs. So someone could say, if we're going to be a bigger or lesser risk as far as our credit goes. In this process of COVID, it hasn't been like a tsunami that washes in and washes out, and you can look at it at any point in time and see what the damage is. It's more like a nuclear accident where you have some initial damage and then you have some residual damage, and it seems if we would listen to the administration, we're gonna have some more damage that waxes and wanes as time goes on. And I'm sure the individuals that are doing these analysis are quite in tune to that for our country as a whole, as well as our world in general. Do you or your office negotiate with them as far as what we're doing financially to be able to influence our credit rating positively or negatively as far as how we can make things better and how we would expend those resources that we're both getting from the federal government and producing within our state?
So I think is a negotiation of a bilateral conversation around a common objective, but I would not characterize our interactions with the rating agencies as a negotiation, but we do put our best foot forward. I'm in effect the mouthpiece for you all. You all formulate the policies. You all decide, you know, how much should be in reserves, how much we should spend, what our structural budget balance looks like, how much we borrow and what we borrow for. All of those things are clearly within your domain. And what we do is put our best possible foot forward. And it's been a really easy story to tell over my tenure, except when we run into these periods of free fall on the economy where everyone gets nervous. service. So our job is really not so much to negotiate, but to tell our story, which does compare ourselves with other jurisdictions. So there's a state rating analyst who's our primary contact, and they cover a region of the country. They have a portfolio of all states, and then they get together with committee to discuss how it is that Florida stacks up relative to other states. So certainly that conversation is had. Certainly it's well informed by what's going on in other jurisdictions because they rate all states, and they're able to make those comparisons. They publish state medians, which also provide some information around quantitative metrics about where we are and how we stack up. Debt per capita, debt as a percentage of personal income, debt service as a percentage of revenues available to pay. And I'm happy to say that we're always indicated as strong by all of those measures. And our economy is growing because our population is growing, because we're in a low tax environment that is very conducive to people relocating here from other higher tax jurisdictions. So all of those things are taken into consideration. Our liability profile is low, again, relative to our peer groups, both on the unfunded pension liability as well as our debt on our balance sheet for financing infrastructure. So we really basically are just a mouthpiece to tell the story, and it's a very good story to tell, as evidenced by how the rating agencies have characterized the prudent fiscal management under the stewardship of the legislative body over a long time.
Representative Diamond, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just was picking up on the questions that Chair Fine was asking, which I thought were really helpful in that discussion, and about the use of our reserves. And as I understand what I'm hearing from you, Mr. Watkins, and I appreciate the presentation, you know, the temporary use of reserves should be temporary. And the further we go there, the more we put at risk our credit rating. And so, you know, going back to look at the chart where you analyze what we did during the last Great Recession, could you just spend a little bit more time talking about that? I mean, assume for a second that we've done the use that we've used half our reserves, and that we make the decision we're not going to use any more right now. What were the revenue increases? What were the things that we looked at last time?
Well, last time we were staring into the abyss, and not sure whether the financial crisis would abate or not. Our economy, our housing market, remember dock stamp tax revenues? I mean, the mortgage foreclosures were off the charts. The economy stopped. People quit moving. People couldn't move from the Northeast to Florida because they couldn't sell their home. Stock market went into the tank, so people's 401ks were clobbered. And so it was a very different climate then. I can say the projected budget deficits were multiples of what we're looking at currently. In one year, and I'm going from vague recollection, $5 to $7 billion in a single year that had to get dealt with in one way, shape, or form. So the numbers were huge. One of the things so it was different in certain respects. The strategy taken. You can see in let's call it year one. Well, so the first thing they did, budget cuts. I actually expected that to happen this year. Surprised it didn't. Relative to what would normally happen, we're halfway through the year, two-thirds of the way through the year, three-quarters of the way through the year. You choose it. Revenue stopped coming in, right? Projected revenue shortfall, right? Normal thing that happens is you meet and cut the budget. Right? So we balance by the end of the year, so we don't dig a hole. Well, we didn't know what the target was. We had no clue what this was going to look like, how it was going to play out. Everybody was at home. And so And the revenue estimating conference wasn't even meeting to project because they said, well, there's way too much uncertainty here, right? So if I reflected on what happened then versus what has transpired now, a little bit surprised, but very pleasantly surprised that we didn't come in and cut, because we didn't know how much we needed to cut, and we didn't know how long it was going to go for. And the federal government sent us $5.9 billion that hit in the U.S. Treasury. It was the biggest wire transfer we've ever gotten, right? And we go, okay, well, maybe we've got some room here, right, to maneuver. And so, and then I reflect back to the financial crisis and see the withdrawal of the monies out of the BSF, $1 billion. We basically drew our reserves down. Not only that, we did, you know, the legislature went in and looked at, you know, what kind of trust funds were flowing into the trust funds and where did we really need money and how could we redirect those monies and how could they be effectively deployed to mitigate the spending cuts that would otherwise be required to health and human services and education and the basic governmental services that are provided and decided to, you know, sweep $1.8 billion. So there's $3 billion right there. As well as additional budget reductions. And we got ARRA money as well. So so I would say it's very different this time than it was last time. And by using the federal money, we bought time. But remember, the federal monies are non-recurring. So don't bank on living on those, because once they're spent, they're gone. Same way as a reserve, right? Once it's spent, it's gone. And so you have to think about, well, you know, transitioning from revenue shortfalls and structural balance back to a balanced budget on a recurring basis so that you're not living on one-time money indefinitely.
Very good.
So I hope that's helpful.
Representative Duran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation and for your input today. I just want to bring us back to 8, and it's more of a question of clarification on the, going back to the idea of the general fund reserves, the unspent GR. It's kind of two-part for you. Fiscal year 2020, am I correct that this is fiscal year 2020, July 1st, all the way until the end of this, June 30th of this year? And if that is the case, would you say, you know, just and just based on some of the work that we do on the healthcare appropriations committee, you know, we are seeing that there's this kind of continued commitment by the feds in certain aspects that will help us tremendously. Mm-hmm. So does that impact that number that we have there? And I say that only ask because as we're going into the 21 budget and building our budget, you know, and some of what I heard you saying kind of makes me think back that maybe we need to start, there may be this hyper focus on cutting social service programs or things of that sort. So I just wanted to kind of get an idea of that clarification so I understand where we stand.
Right. So this is really intended to be more illustrative and put in front of you dynamics and not to give you specific numbers on where we are today, for example. Appropriation staff is in a much better position because they're seeing all this on a real-time basis and can give you a real-time read on what your revenues availables are, what your allocations are going to be, and so forth. So I'm not dodging the question. I'm just not simply really qualified to be up to speed on the multitude of things that they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And for example, the $286 million, I wanted to illustrate this is because this is what we knew at the time. Well, roll forward, and there's a thing called a retrospect, where they do the accounting after the fact, and they said, oh, well, we've got $500 million in reversions. So it was budgetary authority that did not get spent that gets retroactively added to that number. So I hate to say, well, it's this number now, that number then. This was simply to show you, as we were walking through this, this is what we were looking at. And they'll be able to give you much more specific information relative to revenues that are available by programmatic area.
Good. Anybody else? I got one question, Mr. Watkins. We've talked a lot about unallocated GR. We've also talked a lot about budget stabilization. One thing that staff looks at when we think of reserves, we also add in the Lawton Child's Endowment Fund. I noticed that we didn't talk about Lawton Child's in any of your slides. Can you tell us maybe how the rating agencies consider this, you know, the Lawton Child's Endowment, and you know, how it might relate to our reserves?
Yeah, very, very fair point. When we talk about reserves with the rating agencies, this is a traditional measure they use for general fund reserves. But as you see, and we started doing this for the first time during the Great Recession, was showing them trust fund balances that are available, including the Lawton Child's Endowment Fund. Lawton Child's Endowment Fund is easy because it's separately segregated, and it sits there and is there, and we can look at the market value every year and pin a number. The trust funds is more fluid because this goes back way longer time than I'm reflecting on my age. Now, but the Governor's Office of Policy and Budget has put in place an exercise and a discipline around evaluating trust fund balances and looking at, okay, this is the balance going into the year. This is the revenue flow into the fund. This is the expected expenditures from that trust fund. These are, and so we show, when we talk to the rating agencies, we show total reserves, which includes not only the Lawton Child's Endowment Fund, but also available trust fund balances. And we convince them that that's appropriate. You need to think about Florida differently than all other states, because over half of our budget is trust funded. And we have these available trust fund balances during periods of economic and fiscal stress that we can use. And historically, the legislature has gone in and made a determination from time to time that those monies should be swept and used for recurring expenditures. And so, but getting to the point, so the Lawton Child's Endowment Fund sits there, but it's subject to the legislature's discretion. It takes a legislative act to use those monies. So it is, whereas the Budget Stabilization Fund, for example, is a more permanent reserve fund. And not only is it more permanent, but it also, there's a statutory mechanism to replenish that fund. So as such, there's a qualitative difference between, say, the Lawton Child's Endowment Fund and trust fund balances that are characterized as available and those monies that are an embedded permanent source of reserve and financial flexibility for the state. So I would say first would be BSF, because that's there all the time. Second would probably be unspent GR, although that is volatile and moves from year to year. Embedded in Amy Baker's long-term plan is a balance of $1 billion. I've advocated for more. I don't think $1 billion in unspent GR is necessarily adequate in all circumstances. And then third would be the Lawton Child's Endowment Fund. And fourth would be the remaining, all those trust fund balances that are determined not to be needed in the current fiscal year for the purpose for which they're statutorily dedicated.
So just a
long-winded answer. Yeah, I apologize, sure. Mr. Chairman.
Just as a follow-up, do you think it would be fair to say then if we were to use those funds, i.e. a Lawton Child's Endowment Fund, and place that in the Budget Stabilization Fund rather than a separate endowment, do you think that that would be a favorable step towards the state's fiscal health?
Yes, it would be.
Okay.
Because it's qualitatively different, better, more stable, more permanent.
Gotcha. Well, good deal. Members, seeing no other questions, Mr. Watkins, First War Eagle, thank you for being here. I know there's a bad storm coming our way, so everybody please be safe. Seeing nothing else before our committee, Representative Bush moves we rise. That objection, show the meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. And War Eagle.